Welcome to episode 3 of our Steal a Name podcast, where we dive deep into the legal side of real estate. I'm your host, Deanna Reynolds, a seasoned real estate attorney with years of experience helping clients navigate the complex legal landscape of property transactions.
And I'm your co-host, Shanara Carter, a licensed real estate agent specializing in residential and commercial properties. Together, we'll be your guides on this journey, unraveling the legal intricacies and showing and sharing valuable insights to empower you in your real estate endeavors.
Absolutely. Whether you're a first-time home buyer, an experienced investor, or simply interested in understanding the legal aspects of real estate, this podcast is for you. We'll cover a wide range of topics from contract negotiations, investing, property rights, landlord-tenant laws, all the stuff you need to know.
That's right, Deanna. Each episode, we'll bring you expert interviews, case studies, and practical tips to help you navigate the legal challenges and make informed decisions in this dynamic world of real estate.
In today's episode, we'll continue our engaging conversation about investing. In our last episode, and this is your reminder to go back to last week's episode, download it. Matter of fact, subscribe to all future episodes so you don't miss any of them.
Don't miss anything.
Exactly. Last week, we had a very intriguing conversation about investing. It was called Invest, Then Nest. In last week's episode, we left off with Shanara Tarrant telling her personal story about her investing journey, and we promised you some formulas, metrics, and things to be on the lookout for when it comes to investing. So we're going to start off with the formulas. So, you know, everybody put on their thinking cap. There are going to be numbers involved. I don't need you to be afraid of numbers, right, Shanara?
Right.
I promise you this does not go past second grade math. You know, go ask, you know, your cousin, your niece, your nephew, your kid, you know, a neighbor to help you with this math. But I guarantee you can do it. So just pay close attention and we're going to get this through this together. So the very first formula we need to understand is called net operating income. Shanara, can you repeat that for me?
Yes, that is NOI. That's net operating income.
Very good. So in order to calculate the net operating income, we first have to consider or figure out what the gross income is. Income is the amount of money you, the investor, will collect annually. That could be from rent you collect. It could be from vending machines on your property, fees you pay for parking. It could be if you have a washer and dryer in your facility and you have coins. It's any way that you collect money is the income. So just to keep it real simple, let's assume it's a building and the only income coming in is rent. Let's say it's 3 units and each unit is $1,000. So 3 units at $1,000. How much is that a month, Shanara?
That's $3,000 a month.
Very good. So if it's $3,000 a month, how much is that a year?
That is an amazing $36,000 a year.
$36,000. So $36,000 is the gross income. Now we have to take in consideration the expenses. So Shanara, just off the top of your head, just throw out some expenses.
So in terms of expenses, you know off the bat you have utilities. You know you have a water bill that you're responsible for. You, if it is, you know, sectioned off properly from an electrical standpoint, you will have a common electric bill. That is for your hallway, your basement that's unoccupied. You may have a gas bill that all is contingent upon if it's on a boiler system or if it's been sectioned off and zoned so each tenant is paying their own heating bill. And then it could be like just regular maintenance, like lawn care, things of that nature if you're using a property manager. But at the least, you're going to have utilities on that building.
Oh, Shanara, you forgot one that it was very important.
What's that?
Property taxes.
Oh, so, but wait, wait.
Okay.
So the only reason why I did not include property taxes, so forgive me, is that if you have a mortgage on that property, the property taxes and the insurance will be included. But
If you own that property free and clear, that's a different conversation.
Absolutely.
Then yes, you have to include property taxes and insurance if it is not combined in escrow into the mortgage.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. I appreciate that. So for purposes of our illustration, we'll just make it very simple and just assume that expenses are $15,000. I'm just going to throw it all in there. So if your gross income is $36,000 and your expenses are $15,000 a year, that means your gross income is $21,000. I'm sorry, net operating income.
Net.
NOI. The formula is that your net operating income is $21,000. So your first formula that you all have just learned is net operating income. Understanding how much money that building, not building or just investment, how much income you make from that investment after you subtract the expenses. Now, the next formula is a very popular one because of its simplicity, and it lets investors kind of make a quick decision if it's something they want to invest in. And that is called the capitalization rate. Repeat after me, Shanira.
The capitalization rate. That's the cap rate.
Yeah, we were supposed to repeat. Capitalization rate. Very good. You did it. You did it. So this is a cap rate. If you spend any time kind of on Google University, you might have come across this formula. And in order to calculate the cap rate, you take the net operating income and divide it by the market value for the property. So when we say the market value of the property, we're trying to figure out how much it is worth. So if you are in trying to buy a property, we normally look at the purchase price. So what you're going to do is take the net operating income and divide it by the purchase price. And from there, we like to express it as a percentage. So I will give you an example. Let's say that three-unit building we were talking about, let's say it's $300,000. If you have a $300,000 purchase price, which is going to be the market value, we want to divide the net operating income by that purchase price. So in our previous example, we had $21,000 divided by $300,000. So you're taking your net operating income, which is $21,000, and dividing it by $300,000. So all my listeners, bring out your calculators and let's divide that together. I have the answer here, but I'm just going to give you some tech and give you a chance to check it out. So you're going to take your net operating income, $21,000, and then you're going to divide it by the purchase price, which is $300,000, and you get 0.07. But we like percentages, so we're going to times it by 100, so you get 7%. If you were to buy that property, the cap rate is 7%. Now, you're probably thinking, is that good? Well, typically, a good cap rate is between $5,000 to $10,000. You can definitely go above that, and you obviously can definitely go below. The thinking is the higher the cap rate, the better. That means you're getting more income in your pocket. So the higher the cap rate, great investment. So I know some investors who will not entertain a building that has a cap rate of less than 9%. I have some investors who won't entertain an investment unless the cap rate is in the 20%. So let's think about what that means. In order to get a very high cap rate, it has to be a very low purchase price. So there's kind of an exchange. In order for you to have a high cap rate, that must mean that the current market value or the current price has to be low. Yet at the same time, you're collecting a high amount in rent. So when it comes to what that typically looks like, is that areas that have a high cap rate typically aren't the most expensive or influent. They may be in a period of transition, meaning that you can get the property at a lower price, but there's still people in that community paying rent. So we're talking about a cap rate, but let's pause here. What do you think those communities look like that have a high cap rate? Any guesses, Shanira?
Where it's a lower purchase price, that's, yeah. And it's, so this is what I will say, because I'm definitely out here. There's no specific community where the cap rate is going to come out to a certain percentage. Each property has to be evaluated at where it is to determine that percentage and that cap rate. So earlier, I think you were saying a good cap rate is between 5 to 10,000. We meant 5 to 10%. So I just wanted to clarify that. So in order to get a cap rate between 5 and 10%, I can't say that you're going to find that property in Beverly. You're going to find that property in Morgan Park. You're going to find that property in Bucktown.
These are neighborhoods in Chicago.
These are Chicago neighborhoods. You're going to find that. You're going to find that cap rate in San Diego, California. You're going to find that cap rate, right? It's really going to be contingent and based upon that property, because we know that gross income and that net operating income is specific to that property. Now, in Chicago, this is what I will say. You do have some neighborhoods where you can typically collect more in rent. But it still has to be based upon the purchase price. It all has to, you know, like balance out, and it has to be calculated and evaluated per property.
So absolutely, Shanira. Now, one thing I've noticed about cap rates is that it tends to be that the better cap rates are in communities that are on the rise for appreciation. Mm-hmm. So if you read between the lines, those tend to be urban communities. Mm-hmm. And because the prices are low. Now, for areas where the pricing is higher, the cap rates are going to be low because you're obviously paying a lot more for that property. So it's kind of a trade-off. If you're going to have a high cap rate, you're probably going to be in a neighborhood that is on its way up. We'll leave it like that. Mm-hmm. Or the other word we'd like to use is urban.
Urban area.
And
I'm going to add this as it relates to that. So, and that's a whole nother segment, but I'll just give you this. If you are interested in some investors are not, but if you are interested in renting to Chicago Housing Authority Section 8 voucher tenants, that is a program where the government helps to pay, if not all of their rent, a portion of their rent. That's guaranteed money that comes in at the first of the month, depending on when the first falls during the month. And the tenant has their portion. Now, in terms of the Section 8 program, the CHAC Section 8 voucher program, they have something called opportunity areas. With an opportunity area, because it is deemed that the poverty level is below 20%, they reward the landlord for participating in a program. When you first sign up, you get like an extra month of income. You get a couple of incentives for allowing that voucher holder to come into a community that we would kind of consider and deemed as like a mixed income community. So because you're allowing a person that participates in a program to come in that community, they will give you more for rent than you would get in a regular neighborhood community. And we'll get into that later. But that is one where you can definitely look at your cap rate being higher in comparison to renting that same tenant a unit in a community that's not considered an opportunity area.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Shanira. So far, we've covered three different metrics that you should at least be aware of when it comes to investing. You have to understand gross income. You have to use that to calculate net operating income. And then that in turn is used for you to determine your capitalization rate, which is your cap rate. And then, you know, what is considered a good cap rate depends on, you know, your expectations in the areas that you live. Some very expensive and affluent areas, you won't get a cap rate of more than 5%. But in some areas that are where prices are low, it may not be uncommon to get an 18, 19% cap rate. But anywhere between 5 to 10, considering how else you could invest your money, that may not be a bad deal for you. So, Shanira, we've spent a nice amount of time talking about formulas, and there's more, but we can't give it to you all in one day because we want to make sure that this information we share is provided in a manner that doesn't overwhelm you.
That's right.
So we've got you those three formulas, and don't worry, we'll talk about more in future episodes. But Shanira, I wanted you to talk about, as a real estate agent, as an investor, outside of formulas, what is something you look for when it comes to being a good investment?
So there's so many variables to this calculation, and it's not one that's clear cut, but you definitely want to look at the appearance. And I know that you want to look at the appearance. You want to look at properties where someone will want to actually live there. Right?
I've heard it called as curb appeal.
The curb appeal of not only that building, but the entire block. Mm. So you be
block
careful.
Appeal? Is
exactly.
That a word?
Whatever we want to name it, right? So be careful with a bunch of vacant lots. Be careful with like an enormous amount of vacant buildings, just from, you know, the average person is looking at that from a safety standpoint, from a, you know, and even from your value standpoint. So we did talk about going into up and coming urban areas, right? Now, if this is an area that's deemed for, you know, appreciation to take place, then maybe that's a risk you take until it gets to that point. But you can evaluate that at that point. You also want to look for a rent. You want to research, like, what is the average rent that's being collected, like, in that neighborhood. So you can make the unit look as beautiful as possible. But if the average income is $1,000 for rent, and you've put in quartz countertops and hardwood floors and high-end stainless steel appliances and islands, and, you know, you've put in top, you know, the top line amenities mm-hmm. into this unit, and you're expecting to get $2,000, your unit may sit for rent for a very long time. So, you know, there's a lot of variables that need to be taken into place when it comes to that. But your main objective, right, is to just make sure that whatever it is that you are trying to achieve from a investment standpoint, like, what are you trying to walk away from a net standpoint? You want to make sure those numbers check out, and you just want to make sure that that all comes into play. You want to make sure it's in a neighborhood where you're going to have, try to select tenants that are going to appreciate where they live and take care of your property. Like, there's so many different variables that come into place there, which is hard to predict in the beginning. But if you can try to eliminate as many things as possible and try to, like, reason through that, then your chances for this being in your best favor are higher. As we talk about percentages, you got a higher percentage rate of this working out in your favor if you just take all of those variables into consideration when you are looking for an investment property.
I love that. And, you know, it's a lot in this investing game. You have to understand numbers, and there's a bit of, you know, psychology in it too, meaning you have to have the right mindset. If you're the type of person who likes to give your best and do your best on your projects, you just have to be cautious of not over-investing in certain materials because there's a time and place for everything. You don't want to over-improve for the neighborhood. And that's not saying that you don't want to provide quality places for your tenants or quality homes for your residents. It just also has to be affordable. So we got to be careful. You know, we want to do the best for our communities and give our tenants and home buyers the best, but you don't want to price them out. You're not doing them any favors
right. If
you're putting in Wolf appliances, because right. You as an investor are saying, you know, I got put in a $3,000 stove. I want my money back.
That's right.
Well, that neighborhood may not warrant a $3,000 stove, and you've just priced out the same community you were trying to serve. So, you know, it's an analysis that when it comes to looking at the financials, and then there is analysis of looking at the neighborhood, and there's analysis of looking at who your potential end buyer is.
That's
or
right.
If you're not an end buyer, who your tenant is. Right. Because I think Shanira and I kind of have the same mindset. You know, we about that bag and we about that money, but we don't want to take advantage of people.
Absolutely.
And at the same, and also not taking advantage of them, we don't want to outprice people too.
Absolutely.
It's a fine line. You don't want to be super cheap where they're living in a place that falls down, but you don't want to build the Taj Mahal that no one can afford.
Absolutely. So, and this works on two different instances. It's like, do you want to flip? Mm-hmm. Are you investing in a property where you want to flip and you want to resell, or are you investing in a property that you're going to put money into and then rent it out, which most people use this method called the BRRRR method. The BRRRR method stands for buy, refinance, rent, and repeat, right? Or buy, rent, refinance, repeat. The second two can be the best way is going to be to buy, rent, refinance, and repeat, because when you refinance, the lender will take the rent into consideration when you turn that loan into a fixed rate. So your rent that you're collecting on that property is being calculated in there. So it's really what method you're going to take. For the purposes of this podcast, and we're going to have many, we're going to mm-hmm. choose which one we're going to focus on. Mm-hmm. So are we going to focus? So, Deanna, you choose. Will we focus on the investor who wants to collect money on doors over a long period mm-hmm. of time? Mm-hmm. Or today, will we focus on the investor who wants to take the ugliest house on the block, make it the best house on the block, and make an investment from that flip? So which one will we focus on today for our listeners? And then we'll come back and we'll bring the different, you know, avenues that you can capitalize, whichever route you're choosing to take in this amazing investment world.
You know what, Ms. Carter? Those are excellent questions. And that kind of transitions to next week's episode, where we answer some of your burning real estate questions. And that last method, what was the one with the B?
The BRRRR.
BRRRR method. That's going to tie into one of the questions we have next week. So today's episode has been part two of our series, Invest, Then Nest. The implication is that maybe you should invest before you buy your home to nest in. So next week's episode, we have questions from our viewers that we're going to answer. And there's a question that's going to tie very nicely into the BRRRR method and others. So I do encourage you to subscribe to this podcast so you can be alerted of when this next episode drops. Again, I have been Deanna Reynolds, and you have been
Shanira Carter, your co-host.
Yes, we've enjoyed our time with you today, and we look forward to talking more next week. Have a good one.
Bye. See you later.
Bye-bye. Bye.